Good morning, all. First of all, I want to, on behalf of Judge Sykes and myself, extend a warm welcome and thanks to Chief Judge Connolly of the Western District of Wisconsin, who is gracious enough to serve with us for today and another day, or we have you drafted for 2 days?
2 days. I'm delighted to be here. Thank you.
Our first case for argument this morning is Harney versus the City of Chicago. Mr. Flaxman.
May it please the Court. Anyone who lives or reads about an urban environment is familiar with complaints from some neighborhoods that they're not served well by the police. That they call the police and say, come out, there are gangbangers on the corner, and the complaints are that the police don't come out. In this case, a citizen called a police officer on his cell phone, spoke to him for, 6 or 8 minutes on May 16th, and arranged a meeting with him and his sergeant the next day, at which she showed him a video that she said depicted events that had occurred 2 months before.
It wasn't the first time that they'd had contact, right? I mean, there was a reason why they had the cell phone number. And presumably, and I don't know, this wasn't clear in the record, but presumably because he had offered if she had further problems that she could contact him.
That's correct. And I think there was sometime a
year. It's not as odd as you portray it, I guess, is what I'm trying to get.
It's the first time I've come across somebody who called a police officer on their cell phone who wasn't an informant, who was just a citizen saying, I need police service. I don't have anybody's cell phone to call when somebody broke into my house or scratched my car two months ago.
I mean, it's not unreasonable that if there's a situation where there's a dispute and the police officer says if this happens again because there wasn't sufficient facts that for him to pursue it, call me and we'll pursue it. Well, I mean, you're not really making a claim about that.
There's no claim about whether it was reasonable for him to do that or unreasonable. Our claim is that it was unreasonable.
You're just saying it was unusual.
It's unusual and exceptional, and that the officer knew about prior dealings between Harney, Muldoon, and Devarella, and knew that there were claims and cross-claims and that they weren't friends.
Which to me sort of, I mean, I think that's not a good fact for you because it sort of reinforces there is something already when he's starting to look at the information that's being provided.
That's correct. And if there had been a prompt complaint, if on May 7th, Ms. Devarella had called the police and said that Mr. Harney stole the valve cap from my tire and deflated it, I would expect to lose if I was arguing about probable cause to arrest based on that prompt complaint. And if there really was no valve cap on the car. What we have here is a two-month delay, and then we have a video that's shown to the officers or to Officer Madonna, and then we don't have the video. We don't have a chain of custody of that video. We don't know what happened to it. We don't even know how it was made. We know that the video shown to Madonna was a compilation of videos recorded, said to have been recorded in March. Nobody has admitted that they prepared that compilation. Nobody's explained why they made it. Officer Madonna admitted that he knew that the only images on the video were the things that Ms. Devarella wanted him to see, that he wasn't seeing a cinema verite. He was seeing propaganda. We also know that when...
Before we leave the subject of the video, just to clarify the what's missing is the compilation that he actually was shown, but we do have the videos themselves.
We don't know what we have. We have he inventoried a video on May 18th. He viewed a video on May 17th. He didn't take it then. He gave it back to Mr. Varela. He inventoried a video on the 18th. He didn't view it. In the course of the proceedings in district court, two other videos were produced. Again, without any basis, anything to explain their pedigree or where they came from or where they've been or what they really are. There's no time cut on those videos.
Well, was the officer shown the video and said, you know, that's what I saw, or no?
Well, he was, I think he, I think he was shown, I'm not sure if he was shown the video's deposition. It could have happened. The video that he described having seen on May 17th when he was deposed is different than the video that was inventoried on May 18th. The officer described seeing a video that showed Mr. Harney unscrewing a valve cap, completely deflating a tire, and then putting the valve cap on his car. That's not on the video. That's part of the record in this case. That's not on any of the videos, the part record in this case. The officer...
Well, but on the video, he is seen going around and doing something down with DiVarella's tire, and then he comes back, and he appears to be holding something in his hand and comes back to his tire.
I think a paper towel in his hand. But
your eyesight is better than mine, then.
Maybe my imagination is more slanted than yours. I will admit that. But certainly, there's nothing on that video that shows a tire being deflated. And I suspect that we've all checked air pressure on tires and know that you don't deflate a tire in 3 seconds by sticking your finger in the valve. I think the officer agreed that it takes a while to deflate a tire. And he said, I saw Mr. Harney at that tire for a while, long enough to deflate it. That's not on the video. When Mr. Officer Madonna testified before the grand jury in the case against Ms. Muldoon, he was asked by the prosecutor about, did he see spray painting? And he said, yeah, I saw spray painting. There's no spray painting on the video. Officer Madonna tried to patch that up in his deposition, saying, oh, the court reporter wrote it down wrong. I never answered any question about spray painting. But that's not summary judgment. That's credibility. That's trial. This case, I think everyone agrees, turns on what was in the video that Officer Madonna saw on May 17th. We don't have that video. We don't have reliable evidence about what was on that video, and we shouldn't have had summary judgment, either on qualified immunity or on probable cause. We should have had a trial.
Ms. Flaxman, is there a video extant that would be used at a trial?
Not for which a foundation could be established. The videos were taken on a surveillance system used by Ms. DiVarella. The system, I asked about the system at depositions. Well, it was replaced. It was thrown away. We don't know where it is. And it's going to be her testimony about what those videos are. She's going to say, she might say that I took the video and put it here, and that's exactly what it is. But when we questioned her at deposition and her roommate deposition, nobody knew how the compilation was made. Nobody knew about video editing. Nobody knew. It just fell from the sky, these two videos put on one video. That's a jury question.
Well, you have an invoice, don't you, for a video?
We have a video for copying video, transferring videotapes to DVDs.
But that's not the version that the officer initially had.
Well,
we don't know.
We don't know. We have the video that was inventoried on May 18th.
So when you say you don't know who did the editing, it wasn't done by the service that you're now being charged for.
No, but that service just transferred VHS tapes to DVDs. What we do know, and we don't know what was on the video that was viewed by Officer Madonna on the 17th. He didn't inventory it. He didn't take it with him. He left it with Ms. DiVarella, and he took another one the next day. And there's testimony from one of the detectives who viewed a video on May 18th that he or she viewed a video that had time codes on it. There's no time codes on the videos that have been produced in this case.
All of this discussion helps explain why Harney, and Muldoon were acquitted of the criminal charges. But what we're here on is an issue of whether the videos that the officer viewed, or the video, which was apparently a compilation of some sort, was sufficient to establish probable cause, which is a very different sort of an inquiry and doesn't require all the loose ends to be neatly tied up.
But it does require for us to know what it was that the officer saw on May 17th. What was that video? Was it the one that he inventoried on May 18th? We don't know that.
Well, no, that supposes that it's the officer's burden, and it's not. It's your burden here on a civil 1983 claim for wrongful arrest.
It's our burden to prove the absence of probable cause.
The absence of probable cause.
It's the proponent of the evidence to prove admissibility of the evidence.
Well, but let's say the tape had just been destroyed. Say it was lost some back room, as evidence sometimes is. That wouldn't establish a lack of probable cause. You'd still have the officer who would testify to what he saw, correct?
That's correct. But what the officer testified to is different than what's on the tape that we have.
Well, we know that because you're saying you don't have the right tape. You have some excerpt that no one can now make sense of. But it doesn't establish that the officer didn't act in good faith in his initial review of the tapes.
There was physical evidence, too, corresponding to what he was describing he saw on the tape.
That's very confused. He talked about scratches on the trunk lid of the car 2 months after the alleged keying. Ms. Devarella talked about scratches on the bumper of the car. The everyday definition of bumper is different than trunk lid. There were no pictures taken by the police, by Ms. Devarella, of those scratches. The car had been sitting out in the street for 2 months in the city of Chicago, and a lot happens to cars when they're parked on the street. There's no prompt complaint, prompt verification, or prompt way of preserving that evidence. This isn't like Spiegel versus Cortez, where the victim could show the bruise to the police officer, that this is where he hit me and I'm still bruised there. This is my car, it's 10 years old, there's a lot of scratches on the back, and I'm sure that one of them was caused by the keying that happened 2 months ago. Why didn't you make a complaint? It's a jury question about whether or not it was reasonable for Officer Madonna to arrest Harney and Muldoon. And it's also a jury question about whether he lawfully entered their home to make the arrest. Under Illinois law, when a police officer is unlawfully entering your house to make an arrest, if you resist that arrest, you're guilty of disorderly conduct. And Mr. Harney didn't do that, did not resist. When the officer came in to arrest Ms. Muldoon, who was sick without a warrant, and take her down to the police station.
Well, but he did have permission to come into the curtilage area, correct?
That's not he had permission from whom? The city says
to Varela.
Well, that's not really supported by the record. And this also gets into the summary judgment procedural question.
Yeah.
I don't know how the Western District of Wisconsin works, and I apologize for not.
Hopefully pretty similarly, counsel.
Well, in the district court, there are these complex rules about Rule 56.1 statements, where the proponent has to set out.
We have something similar.
And then the opposing party has to respond to those. There are cases in the district court saying that it's error to cite to the record. You have to depositions or transcripts. You have to cite to the Rule 56 statement.
Well, I guess I'm missing something. Let's say that she wasn't even there. He was pursuing a complaint that she had filed. She is a resident of the same building. How could he not have permission to get as far as the curtilage? She had permission. She had the ability to grant him permission implicitly, if not explicitly.
The record isn't clear, but she granted implicit permission, or even that it's the same entrance to the Harney's house as it is to her dwelling. I haven't been there. We don't have pictures. That was an issue that came into the case late.
But isn't that your burden?
It's my burden to show that there's no consent. And I think I showed that Mr. Harney testified that I walked in and he followed me in. I didn't.
Well, but that gets me to the second stage. So let's assume that we find that he had a right to be in the exterior area of the building. And he's told he's under arrest, correct? And that they also wish to arrest his wife. And then he says, fine, I'll go get her. There's no other exchange, correct? He turns around, he walks in, he's under arrest. It's a little presumptuous of him to think that being under arrest, he can just walk into a house and be freed from control of the police officers, isn't it?
Only if the police officers say, don't go there or I'm coming with you or put your hands.
They just put him under arrest. I mean, he's in some sense, he's seized at that point. For him to just turn around and unless he was presuming the police would follow him, it wouldn't make a lot of sense for him just to walk into an area where they couldn't follow.
Well, if he didn't believe he was, too many negatives, if he believed that he was free to leave, to go into his house without the police following him, then he wasn't really under arrest. And the question is, what did the police do to tell him or communicate to him that he was not free to leave? And his testimony and his evidence is nothing. They said, you're under arrest. And I said, I want to talk to your wife. She's sick. We'll go get her. And he went in to talk
and
to her.
That's where I have the difficulty. If you're told you're under arrest, at least you're on notice. And you may not have been handcuffed, but to think that you're then free to proceed into a building that the police can't follow, it's a little difficult for me. I mean, it's not a situation where, for example, he went in the house, closed the door behind him. We don't know, but again, it seems to me it's your burden to establish that, isn't it?
He would have been arrested if he closed the door behind him. I think his testimony was that he thought.
That's my point. He would have been arrested had he closed the door.
Which means he could not freely close the door and preserve the sanctity of the home from his wife.
Isn't that a fact that makes clear that there was implicit permission for the police to follow him through?
I can't answer that. If you find that way, then we
understood.
Mr. Flaxman, will the record give us a clear indication of where this exchange of or the dialogue occurred, where I'm going to go get the wife? In other words, I know it's outside the threshold. Do we have any sense? Is it right at the threshold?
I don't believe the record is crystal clear, and perhaps my worthy sister will help us with that.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Flaxman.
Thank you very much, counsel.
Ms. Hornstra?
May it please the court. When a petty feud between neighbors ends up in federal court, it is very often because the police have gotten dragged into the dispute, and this is such a case. As you've heard, the plaintiffs in this case had an ongoing dispute with their upstairs neighbor, Pamela Devarella. The police have been called repeatedly to hear complaints from both sides against the other. And when that dispute escalated into criminal property damage, and there was surveillance video appearing to show plaintiffs vandalizing the car, Officer Madonna arrested them. And, of course, this lawsuit presents the question whether it was probable cause. As is apparent from the discussion earlier this morning, the plaintiff's effort to defeat summary judgment hinges on trying to prevent consideration of the video exhibits that the defendant submitted with summary judgment. And, of course, we've acknowledged that the DVDs that were submitted as summary judgment exhibits are in a different format from the videotape that Officer Madonna viewed on May 17th. But there's no genuine issue. There's no dispute. Plaintiffs have raised no dispute that the footage Officer Madonna saw of two incidents in the condo garage, one involving Harney, one involving Muldoon, is on those DVD exhibits.
So it is the complete visual that he reviewed, that the officer reviewed before he made the arrest.
Saw is on those tapes. There is additional footage. Because the DVDs that were reproduced, the plaintiffs they requested Devarella in discovery to produce the originals, to have them reproduced.
These are the VHS tapes.
They were on VHS tapes. Their first generation copies were made on DVDs. There's been no suggestion.
And who made those? The indication was we don't know where they came from. We don't know who made that.
The tapes were in Devarella's custody. She was requested to produce the originals. There's been no suggestion that she violated the rules of discovery and produced anything but the original tapes.
So she produced original VHS tapes.
Counsel, and then they were taken to a service and then transferred to DVD.
And did it have time stamp
on
it, 10 days?
Time stamps on it.
So what of the plaintiff's suggestion that there were tapes that had a time date on it?
That is sort of one of several little nitpicking things to try to manufacture an issue of fact. Detective Krakus was asked, did the video have a time stamp on it? And he said, I think maybe there was. I don't remember. And, sometimes if you imagine what a video looks like, oftentimes surveillance videos have those on them. He said he didn't remember. And nobody else said there was a time stamp on him.
But the record indicates the original VHS tapes were provided. And then who was it who had the DVD made? It was your client, correct?
I believe that the DVDs I wasn't counsel in the district court, so I don't know exactly the, discovery, but plaintiffs requested production from Dave Arella of the originals. I don't know if they were provided directly to Mr. Flaxman and taken to the reproduction service. I think that may have been it. And then I think
he seems to be saying no, but I understand that sometimes these things get disputed and we'll have to look at the specific.
Right, but again, that was the discovery request was for the original videotapes. There's been no suggestion that Dave Arella violated the rules of discovery and produced anything else. And there's been no evidence that the images, the actual footage that overlaps between what Officer Madonna saw and what's on the exhibits that we produced, is any different, that there was any fabrication. And all
Officer
the,
Madonna testified to that effect?
He actually didn't. There was a question that Mr. Flaxman was asked about his deposition. And, regretful in hindsight, that would have been an easy way to clear up this particular squabble, to play it for him and say, were these the videos you saw? I think at that point, Officer Madonna's counsel, there had been no suggestion that there was any difference in the images. And in fact, it really is a manufactured issue at this point. So we
but
don't
how,
have
how were
that.
They introduced then as part of the summary judgment record?
I'm sorry?
How were they introduced then as part of the summary judgment? By affidavit, by DiVarella, or how did they come into evidence?
I think they were attached as exhibits, and it was stated that they were reproductions of the
But was it a deposition transcript that identified them? I mean, how were they admitted or considered as a factual matter by the district court?
There was a statement in, I think it was defendants, I don't know if it was their 56.1 statement or their reply, but they stated that they were reproductions of.
Can I take you something related? Because I think maybe the stronger point for the plaintiffs is that the two videos don't seem consistent with what DiVarella's comments were. It is a very short period of time that he's stooped over making the change.
Well, and that just goes to how the video is interpreted. And there, too, the plaintiffs have
tried
to argue that.
But having viewed it, it's, maybe 10 seconds? It must have been a pretty high-performance tire if they managed to get it out.
Officer Madonna, when he saw it, he had talked to Dave Arella, and she said, here's what happened. And she had, she knew that her valve cap had been there and then it was missing and her tire was a little bit low. So
did she say a little bit low or flat?
I don't remember. I think maybe there was differing.
All right. And did she, in fact, say the trunk lid was scratched as opposed to the bumper? Because it certainly looks like it's Ms. Muldoon's hand is down by the bumper, not up by the.
She said it was the bumper. Officer Madonna couldn't remember at his deposition whether he saw the damage on the trunk or the bumper. But Dave Arella was very clear that she showed him the damage that was related to this. The invoice said it was on.
Well, it's not his memory that I'm worried about. It's Dave Arella's. Did she say that the damage was on the trunk or on the bumper?
On the bumper. And she said she showed it to him. It was Officer Madonna who couldn't remember if it was on the trunk or the bumper. But she showed him the damage she said was caused by her.
So I guess the argument is we've got these pieces of tape which aren't really very definitive. We've got a two-month delay before DiVarella, ever shows up with the complaints. And it's all kind of flimsy. Isn't this a question for a jury rather than for the court to say that there was enough here for him to find that the officer acted in good faith to find probable cause?
No, because if the videos are properly considered, and they are, because the differences in interpretation about what the videos show just don't establish that what the images Officer Madonna saw aren't the same as on the DVD. And if I can address briefly plaintiff's point that, that Officer Madonna didn't see the same thing because he said he saw stealing a valve cap and flattening a tire, and that's not what the videos show. I mean, that goes to interpretation. So if the videos are properly considered, the court can decide as a matter of law looking at it, is this something that's consistent? Could a reasonable officer looking at this believe that this supported the allegations of criminal activity? The district court said reasonable people that could disagree about it. We don't take issue with that finding. We agree that they're ambiguous, but they're certainly consistent. And given Dave Arella's complaints about.
But is the question for us whether reasonable people could look at the body of evidence, the fact that this is an ongoing dispute between neighbors, she possibly has a grudge, she waits 2 months to come forward to the videos, which are fairly inconclusive. Looking at all the facts, a reasonable person could say that now there was something else going on here than that the officer was had enough to go forward. He seems to have acted awfully aggressively. That would be the question we have to decide, right?
I disagree, because there's no evidence that the video was fabricated, and although it's inconclusive, it is consistent with what Devarella said. And you know, we acknowledge that there's a delay. There was absolutely bad blood between these neighbors, but you know, if there's one way of looking at it, that the bad blood between the neighbors actually makes these allegations more plausible, because if somebody showed me this video that, you know, shows my neighbor scratching the car, I mean, I would wonder why on earth somebody would do this, because mature adults don't normally do this to their neighbor's property, you would hope. But the fact that these, you know, that they had all these complaints, and Harney in his own testimony when he offered his explanation for what happened with the tire, he said he thought that Devarella was putting screws in his tire, and that's why, you know, he was looking at her tire.
Which gives him motive, is what you're saying.
It's also consistent to say he thinks that she flattened his tire. And, you know, although he was only at the tire briefly, you know, Devarella said that the tire was a bit flat. He was there for quite a while. You could, you know, get a fair amount of air out of there just to be malicious and cause inconvenience to have to fill up the tire, or, you know, it's actually potentially dangerous. And so, you know, we acknowledge these are the actual offense was very petty theft. But
all of this minutiae suggests to me that this is a case about who has the burden of proof. And here the plaintiff has the burden of proving the absence of probable cause. And so the fact that there are details of the fact pattern here that could be deemed ambiguous or could cut both ways, you know,
that's right.
In that case, the tie goes to the defendant.
It's all a good argument for why the plaintiffs were both acquitted at their criminal trials, because the video evidence was ambiguous. You know, they it just wasn't enough to prove guilt beyond a reasonable cause, but it was enough for the officer to go on. And he wasn't, required to, you know, resolve the credibility between these two parties. You have two households leveling, you know, frankly, really bizarre accusations at one another. It's certainly not possible to tell on this record, you know, who's in the right here. Maybe all.
Ms. Harsham, I'd like to ask you, from the onset of, or at least the onset of what we can record of the controversy that's evolved between the neighbors until the time of the arrest of Mr. Harney, what contact did Officer Madonna ever have with Mr. Harvey prior to the arrest?
The first time he met any of these people, it was sometime in April 2004. Devarella called 911, and he was assigned.
Does the record reflect that Madonna and Harney have some contact at that point?
So right after that incident, he talked to him, and you know, it is unusual that he gave everybody here a cell phone, but it wasn't just that. You know, he and Devarella were close friends. You know, they weren't. It wasn't like he gave her his cell phone because they were friends. He actually gave everybody there his cell phone. Muldoon actually called Madonna the day after that first incident to say it wasn't me who damaged this. It's unusual, but you know, Officer Madonna's a beat officer. Part of his job.
Well, I'm not questioning the giving of the cell. Okay. I just want to try to get a chronology. Prior to arrest, what are the points of contact between Mr. Harney and...
There was that, and then he came out with September 2005. I think there were basically three incidents. There was April 2004, September 2005, and then there was this with the arrest. There were other officers who were called at different times by both sides.
I understand. But Madonna has conversations over this period of time with Mr. Harney how many times?
At least once he talked to him in person, and he talked to Muldoon on the phone in April 2004. The record doesn't reflect. When he came out to the property in September 2005, but I don't think the record's clear whether he talked to.
Could you help me a little bit on the arrest situation? I asked Mr. Flaxman, and he suggested that you might be the source of authority, which may well be the case. This arrest occurs in the exterior of the confines of the apartment, but on the curtilage of the property, obviously, right?
I disagree that it was the curtilage. I mean, by the legal definition of
Was it on the sidewalk?
No, it was inside the condo property. But the legal idea of curtilage is not just your property. It's property that's sort of an extension of your home where you have a reasonable expectation.
Yeah, we don't have to examine property 101 here. I'm with you on that.
It was part of the condo property.
Yeah. So I'm not getting into whether he had permission, because I assume all the condo owners can invite anybody into
the... Right, and the officers were in Devarella's unit right before that,
okay,
and went straight to...
But I want to speak to if the record says anything about the location of the of that statement by Mr. Harney, I'm going to go get Ms. Meldoon.
Right.
Yeah. Where are we? Are we right at the threshold? Are we not at the threshold? I mean,
They're on the condo property outside the door, but it's not clear.
Where's the door? Is the door from here to the end of the courtroom? I'm just trying to get
the record itself. It does not, you know, have any evidence about the size of the thing. As far as the curtilage, I don't know if you're talking about the curtilage or the consent to enter, but and the curtilage issue is very clear.
No, I'm not interested in the
consent.
I'm interested in the arrest situation,
okay,
and whether Mr. Harney is, by conduct, dialogue, whatever, he has in any way said come into the apartment. I'd like to know if we know whatever they're saying to each other, how close they are to that threshold.
I don't think the record says exactly how.
I mean, following up on Judge Connolly's point, if they were, you know, 100 feet away on the sidewalk and he says, I'm going to go get Ms. Muldoon, that's one scenario. If they're right at the threshold, you know, might be another. On this issue of you can follow me in even though I'm under arrest. I
take it, it sounds like it was a pretty small yard in front of the place.
I think
they were fairly close. He was told, you know, we've come to arrest you. We need to talk to your wife.
Because the trial court, nor have we been favored with any sort of description of the property, have we?
No. And you know, the district court, in its opinion, I think made some common sense assumptions about what properties like this look like. Mr. Harney actually brought a motion to reconsider, you know, about on the curtilage issue. If he had something, you know, to say to refute what the district court's reasonable assumptions were, that was up to him to do it, and did none of that.
So no schematic was presented to Judge Lefkoe?
No. I see my time has expired, but we would ask that the judgment of the district court be affirmed.
Flaxman, your time had expired, but you may have an additional 2 minutes.
The burden issue is different, I submit, at trial than it is on summary judgment, when plaintiff's burden opposing the defendant's motion for summary judgment is...
The trial burdens are relevant on summary judgment. You know that.
The other point I'd like to discuss is that the assertion that we know with certainty that the videotape that was produced in this case, or that the videotapes that were produced in this case, are authentic. There was a question about how was the foundation established for these videotapes? Was there an affidavit? No. Was there deposition testimony? No. There is a request to produce those videotapes, and tapes were produced by Ms. Devarella's counsel. They were picked up by counsel for the city, who had them converted to DVDs. But there's no evidence, there's no affidavit, there's no sworn testimony about where the tapes came from, that these are authentic copies of what was actually recorded sometime in March of 2005. And there's always been an uncertainty about whether the incident with the tire occurred on March 6th or March 9th.
But, Ms. Flaxman, in deposing Ms. DiVarella, was this area examined on the collection and production of these videos?
There was a lot of I don't recalls and I don't understand in her deposition. It wasn't very illuminating, as I recall. And the same with Ms. Baharek, if I don't recall.
Right.
I don't know.
Thank you, Ms. Faxon. Thanks to all counsel. The case is taken under advisement.